This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We have No Filter Friday at some point in time today. Welcome. Look forward to the show. In the last hour, we're going to have Jessica Vaughn, director of the Center for Immigration Studies, to talk about something going on called birth tourism and what it means to us, that you can just simply come to this country, deliver a baby, you become a citizen, and therefore you start the chain migration. What does it mean for us? What does it mean for healthcare in the U.S.? A bunch of recent raids here that are really compelling as it relates to the breadth and depth and the length that people will go to in order to circumvent the laws in this country and become beneficiaries of so many of the privileges that we've grown accustomed to and what that ultimately means. In the second hour, we're going to be talking about the school system. They can't seem to be able to collect grades. They can't seem to be able to collect test scores. What does this ultimately reveal? And we'll also talk about the Hard Rock Hotel. This hour, coronavirus. Is the United States better prepared for this catastrophic outbreak that a lot of authorities in the healthcare community have feared over the years in dealing with a pandemic? And joining us on the line is Dr. Fred Lopez, professor of medicine and infectious diseases specialist at the LSU New Orleans School of Medicine. Dr. Lopez, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Neil.
So, Doc, a lot of folks are talking about this coronavirus. What is it exactly?
So these coronaviruses are viruses that have been around for a long, long time. They didn't really get a lot of attention because they typically just caused mild cold-like symptoms. But you may remember in the 2002, 2003, there was a severe acute respiratory syndrome known as SARS. SARS was caused by a coronavirus. And that coronavirus actually jumped species from animals to humans and then was transmitted from human to human and caused a large outbreak with, around 800 deaths and got a lot of attention for 2002 to 2003. And then in 2012, another coronavirus jumped species, and this coronavirus was the one that caused MERS, or Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. And it also has caused many, many deaths and jump species from animal to human and then human to human. And now we're hearing about another, what's known now as the 2019 novel coronavirus that appears to have originated in Wuhan, China, originally described in patients who had visited a seafood market that also sold many species of live animals as well. So again, it's felt to have originated in animals because we know those coronaviruses can cause infections in animals. And that exposure from animal to human occurred, and then humans have now been diagnosed who had no exposure to that market, meaning that they probably got it from other humans. And so we're seeing human-to-human transmission of one of these new coronaviruses. We don't know a lot about it. We're learning pretty much minute by minute about this new coronavirus. How long does it take from the time of exposure to the time of illness? It looks like as little as a couple of days to as many as 14 days before people start to develop fever, difficulty breathing, usually a non-productive cough. But the real question is going to be, how easily does it transmit from human to human? That's going to really dictate how many cases we see. Because, you know, they're shut down basically that area in China at this point in terms of travel. And it's going to be humans who are infected and their ability to infect other humans that dictates the number of cases. But as you may know from this morning, 26 people now apparently dead from this infection and more than 800 people infected worldwide. So we're just starting to hear more and more about it, but it's worrisome.
Dr. Lopez, there are a lot of questions being asked as to just how prepared we are. I mean, as a result of the anthrax outbreak in 01, and as you talked about SARS in 03 and MERS in 14, and obviously the West African Ebola in 2016, when we think about those, and obviously we've had a lot of practice that we probably rather not have, how prepared are we as in kind of an integrated domestic response here in the United States?
Well, you know, you make some good points about we're getting more and more experience at responding to these public health emergencies. The World Health Organization, as you know, has called this a public health emergency in China, but not an international public health emergency yet. That may change in the coming days to weeks, but at this point, the U.S. has only seen confirmed one case, and there are several other cases in Texas and California that are currently being evaluated. So again, we may be seeing more and more cases in the U.S., but one of the things that was done very early on when cases first began to be reported was that the U.S. decided to funnel, if you will, patients coming from that area of the world through now five major airports in order to screen individuals who might have fever, shortness of breath, and cough and might be infected with this new coronavirus and then basically quarantine them so they can't go on to infect other individuals. And I think that's going to be helpful. The problem is that if you're not symptomatic when you come through one of those airports and you don't develop your illness until several days later, well, then you've missed your chance to identify those individuals because they were not symptomatic at the time that they were screened. And that's going to be possibly what happens here, is that people are not going to have any of the symptoms of this infection until after they've been screened. But I think we're better and better. Look, this is a respiratory viral illness. And, very similar to, it transmits very similarly to the flu virus. So through respiratory droplets, usually secondary to sneezing, coughing, or maybe shaking hands with somebody who is infected, who just coughed into his or her hand. You shake their hand, you put your hand to your eyes, your mouth, or your nose, and all of a sudden you now acquiring that respiratory infection. So it's very similar to the flu in the way it's transmitted. And it doesn't yet appear to be causing as much severe disease as SARS or MERS. But again, we're just now initially describing this outbreak. So unclear what's going to happen. But so far, it doesn't look to be as deadly, for example, as those two illnesses.
I know the Chinese did some a number of initial work on this in a very expedited fashion. They did share it internationally with everyone. Still a lot of questions back and forth between health officials here in the United States and Chinese officials there. And it kind of highlights this thing is that, you know, an international system is only as good as the information that's fed into it and the ability and willingness to share. Where do you think we are? Because there was a study done by the HHS Inspector General back in 2014 that kind of, surveyed healthcare administrators across the country, and 71% said their facilities were not prepared to receive the Ebola patients in that year. And then in 2017, to follow up, they had cut that by two-thirds, and 14% said that, they were no longer prepared for Ebola and other kind of pandemic challenges.
Yeah, I think we're getting better and better as we begin to understand these infections through these outbreaks that occur from time to time. Again, because this virus behaves similar to other viruses like the flu, for example, we do have an understanding of what kind of precautions are most likely to be effective in decreasing the transmission in someone, for example, who might be hospitalized. In that particular scenario, these patients are going to be put in private rooms with airborne isolation, and people who come in and out are going to be wearing gloves, gowns, masks, goggles, in order to decrease the transmission risk. So we do have standard precautions in hospitals. The issue is outside of hospitals, if somebody's sick and transmitting it in the community where people aren't going to be having personal protection equipment like that to prevent acquiring these infections. So I didn't mention this, but education is extremely helpful coming from China. Coming from the United States and the CDC and other public health agencies to basically allow people or alert people, rather, who have come from that area of the world, who if they do develop an illness that's consistent with one of these coronavirus infections, that they immediately reach out to their public, to their private, to their healthcare provider and the public health department in order to facilitate diagnosis of this infection. One of the things that China did do early on is genetically sequenced the virus that's causing the infections and dropped it in a gene bank so that everybody in the world could access it and create testing to diagnose this. So the CDC's already created a PCR test that can make the diagnosis of one of these coronavirus infections that they tailored based on those genetic sequences that were deposited by the Chinese scientists. So that's very helpful. Right now, any testing is really being done in coordination with the CDC. I imagine that there'll be talks about sharing the CDC's diagnostic tests with public health departments as this evolves. But again, those genetic sequences have been very helpful because they do allow us to readily make the diagnosis. Look, these illnesses can look a lot like the flu. Yeah. And we're going to be testing for the flu. We're going to be testing for these coronaviruses and the right people who have had recent exposure to either people who are diagnosed with these infections or come from areas where these infections are being diagnosed. And they can look awfully similar. And it really makes another call for flu vaccination if you haven't been vaccinated, as if we need more viral respiratory infections in the area.
Yeah, we need a couple more on the list, right?
Yeah, we're high levels of flu-like activity since October, still through the most recent data, and now we're hearing about this. So please, if you haven't been vaccinated against the flu, at least let's take that one off the potential list.
Doc, one last question. How long does it typically take in looking at kind of the scheming around this as to how contagious this virus would be?
Well, I think it's contagious in the sense that people are immune to it and it transmits, at least we know, from human to human. We just don't know how effectively from human to human. But we know that if you are around these respiratory secretions and they somehow get into your, again, your airways, that you can become infected with it. How effective is really going to be the question in terms of transmission from human to human? We know it's a likely jump from animal to human, and now the question is, how effective is that transmission going to be? And unfortunately, we have no vaccine to prevent these infections. We don't have any targeted antiviral treatment against this virus. Several candidates are being assessed and developed in terms of vaccines, and even some drugs are being evaluated, but we have nothing available right now for prevention or treatment. And so, you know, good old-fashioned hygiene is important. Washing your hands as often as possible is going to be extremely important if more and more of these cases are being seen. Don't touch your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands is going to be something we're going to be reminding everybody. Don't be around anybody who's sick. And certainly if you're sick, stay home. Don't contact your healthcare provider and facilitate coordination, but don't go exposing other individuals.
I heard someone suggest, and I just want to get your reaction to this, that if you feel like you have the symptoms of this coronavirus, that you should call your healthcare provider before you arrive there so that they
absolutely
can prepare to receive you. Is that good advice?
That's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. Call ahead of time. Let them be prepared so that they can put you in an area where you're not going to be exposed to anyone and or facilitate coordination with the public health department to determine how to best initially assess you. But we don't want people coming in de novo into waiting rooms with other individuals and transmitting infection by coughing and sneezing in a room full of individuals. So call ahead of time in order to get directions about how to proceed with evaluation.
And obviously, if you have travel abroad, that is a must. So assume that it is corona and call.
Absolutely. And you know, it's kind of like Ebola several years ago. That's a question that's being asked now. If you show up with a respiratory infection, is have you come from that area of the world recently, or have you been around somebody who's been infected and or suspected to have been infected with this coronavirus? Because, again, human-to-human transmission can occur in people who are coming from that area of the world.
Dr. Fred Lopez, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at the LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, one of the best in the country. We really appreciate it, Doc. Thank you so much for your time and your insight.
Very welcome. Bye-bye.
All righty, we'll be right back. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. We've got some additional information to share with you. What are your thoughts? Do you think we're ready? There are some that say, maybe not. And we'll talk about other reasons why when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. Let's go to Eric on line one. What say you, Eric?
Hey, Newell. How are you, sir?
Doing great. It's a Friday, baby.
Yes, sir, it is. Hey, I just happened to catch the doctor you had on a little while ago.
Yes.
And I might have caught the tail end of it. I listened to it for a while. But I was listening to him talking about the coronavirus and whatnot. And I'm actually a provider at one of the hospitals on the Gulf Coast. And we see coronavirus pretty commonly. I mean, coronavirus is a pretty common thing. It's more specifically the strain of coronavirus. I didn't really hear if he touched on that or not.
Yes, he did.
We
talked about the SARS outbreak in 03, which was a coronavirus, as well as the MERS virus in 14, which was another coronavirus. And he talked about the fact that this is just a respiratory viral thing that is very common. What's not common, as he talked about, it's common in animals. It's not that common where it's transmitted from animals to humans and then human to human.
Correct. Zoonosis, basically, yes.
Right.
I hear the public running to the ER. As I'm heading to work right now, freaking out they have coronavirus, And that really, we saw the same thing with Ebola and that kind of thing. People getting upper respiratory infection, automatically they think they have the coronavirus, which, again, they may. But
we have so many, and he talked about that. We have so many strands of the flu floating around right now. Obviously, we've had kind of a flu epidemic here for several months. It hasn't been as severe as what was originally anticipated. But needless to say, as he pointed out, Dr. Lopez, that is, the last thing we need is just yet another one on the already lengthy list, right? And so that continues to be a challenge. And as we know from our experience with both SARS and MERS, to get the medicine necessary, the vaccine necessary to deal with this, you're talking about maybe 3-4 months, and that's what it took before. So, I think that uncertainty is what has everyone concerned, because it's not something where you have a response that's immediately available, right?
Well, even outside of those two, which are bad, strands of the coronavirus, there is, like I'm saying, there is more common coronavirus.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, we do PCR respiratory profiles and see coronavirus all the time.
Right.
Coronavirus is actually quite common.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's just quite common.
And down here in the South, it presents itself more often than we care to think about, right?
Yes, sir. Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I just wanted people to know they weren't getting a death sentence with the coronavirus.
No. Absolutely. There are actually 26 confirmed deaths as of this morning.
Right now, and just as many with the flu, so.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Eric, great. Thank you so much.
Yes,
appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Newell.
Yes, sir. Let's go to James on line two. What say you, James?
Just curious question, and I'll hang up to hear the answer. How long from one being exposed to the virus, how many days or hours until the manifestation of the symptoms appear? And if China is locking down all these cities with people being relegated to their homes virtually, why aren't we stopping anyone from that area coming into this country at all? I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
You know, it's a good question about that. Obviously, in China, they've now shut down three cities. There's been confirmed cases now in the United States, Mexico, Thailand, Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, Vietnam, Macau, and South Korea. And obviously, as each day goes by, I think this list is going to increase. Yesterday, there were eight confirmed countries. I believe there are 10 today. So that list is definitely going to increase as well. They're guessing right now the incubation period is somewhere between 10 to 14 days. But they're really not able to really drill down on that and have a good factor of reliability until there are more cases presented, whereby they can track this a little bit more in a robust way. Albeit in China, there are hundreds upon hundreds of confirmed cases, if not thousands. The manner in which they collect their data is a little bit different than what we're doing here in some of the other countries as well. So it's going to be kind of an uncertainty a little bit in the short term until they're able to figure that out exactly, and where people were initially exposed to this and how that's tough getting your hands around that. It seems as though a lot of this is going back to the culture in China of eating these exotic animals, whether they are snakes or fox, bats, all kinds of different exotic animals that in their culture they actually eat. And they eat these animals incredibly fresh. In fact, you walk into these markets where a lot of these wild animals are there. And these animals, in many cases, also provide, in their culture, medicinal value. And so in some of these markets, you go out and you're picking the animal that you desire to consume. And in fact, when you talk about some of the fish in the sashimi that you eat there, it's presented while still attached to the carcass of the fish. So it's a matter of consumption of food that is foreign to this country in many respects. And so there's this higher likelihood of some of these coronaviruses being passed from animals to humans. And in this particular case, they're still trying to figure out. There were some reports yesterday that it was definitely, or day before, it was bats. Then yesterday, there was some additional information that came out that seemed to indicate it was snakes. And now there's kind of some mixed information coming out this morning that it may be presented in just more than one type of animal. They're not sure. So they continue to try and drill down on exactly where this is coming from. And in fact, badgers and rats are also cited as possible sources by the Chinese government medical advisor Zhong Nanshan, that's reported in a number of publications this morning as well. So this thing is very much a moving target as to what the ultimate source of it has been. In China, they've shut down three different cities now. And in fact, a lot of outbound public transport out of these areas shut down. You can't leave the cities because they're trying to isolate it in one area. And they've actually suspended the sale of poultry, of live poultry, in one or two of these cities as well. So they're drilling down in a multi-systemic way, trying to eliminate any possibilities of this spreading within their own centers. And obviously, a lot of the transportation out of there has been impacted as well. Let's go to line one. We'll talk to Jim. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Uh,
the problem with that is that they eat a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah.
We was over there a couple of months ago, and they have a market where you can eat monkey brains. The monkey's still alive while they cut the brain open, and they're eating the brain while the monkey is underneath the table. It's a setup where the monkey is underneath the table in a cage, and they cut the skull of the monkey up, and you're eating the brain while the monkey's still alive. It's their culture over there. They do it all the time. Snakes the same way. Exotic snakes, they roast them, they grill them, and it's great. It's like I said, I tried one of them one time. I was curious. And other things that we might take as yuck, the lizard. It's another big delicacy over there, you know what I mean? So this stuff is cooked right there. You pick out what you want to do, and they do it for you, you know?
Yeah.
The monkey brain is just kind of tough because we were sitting at the table next door. We never knew it was a monkey on the table. We just thought it was just a open pit that was eaten out of.
Right.
But in reality, they brought the table in, and the five Chinese gentlemen sit there and just start picking the brains and start eating the brains. Monkey underneath the table. We never knew that. The guy told us the monkey was on the table.
Yeah.
It's really crazy, man. It's a way of life here. It's different from the western part of the world.
I've had snake before. It's actually good.
I'm not talking about eel like you see in the Chinese restaurants.
I'm not talking about eel. I've actually eaten rattlesnake, and I've had a couple of other different types of snakes that mm-hmm. they do eat, and it's, you know, in Texas and so forth, and never thought I would do it, but I did. It was good.
Out of curiosity,
I don't know that I crave it, right, Jim? I don't wake up in the morning saying, I think today I'm going to eat snake.
Yeah, I understand. But it was great talking to you, man. Have a great day, okay?
All righty, you too. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. I'll talk about some other things that we should possibly be a little bit concerned about and what some of the health officials are saying as well when we come back. This is Newell on WWL. And some of the publications are reporting even further again this morning that they believe that this strain of the coronavirus actually came from a seafood market in Wuhan where wildlife was sold illegally. And the World Health Organization has stated that an animal appears most likely to be the primary source, with experts suggesting that it may have been, and the intermediary source may have been, bats, badgers, rats, or snakes. And just to give you an example of, they've been able to, when they went back to the SARS outbreak in 2003, they were able to identify that it passed from bats by the mast Pam civets. And the MERS virus, which is another coronavirus that presented itself back in 2013-2014, was carried from bats to humans. The intermediary source was camels, believe it or not. And they were able to work backwards and figure that out. One of the other issues is that as the number of countries continues to increase day by day, and as I pointed out earlier, there's now confirmed cases in South Korea, Macau, Vietnam, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Japan, Thailand, Mexico, and the United States, is we're being very proactive as it relates to a number of different airports, five to be exact, where they've limited entry into this country visa air travel. Everyone traveling from Wuhan in particular is funneled to airports in New York, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, or Atlanta. I think two of those five airports, they were not receiving folks there yesterday, but they will be receiving them today once they were able to get all of the equipment that they needed to help in the identification of whether someone presents with the symptoms of this coronavirus. It begs the question, though, about our borders. And I know people are going to say, there he goes again talking about the borders. But the fact of the matter is, it's a challenge there. And when you have, for example, over 50 different points of entry from Mexico into the United States, they're only utilizing some of the technologies that they have in less than 10, I think, is what it is, there are about 20, ports of entry that the CDC is actually putting some of their assets and resources there as well. When we talk about birth tourism, it's going to reveal some real challenges that you're going to see. In the last hour, we'll have an expert to talk about that. And it kind of dovetails right into whether or not the safety and security of our borders in the spread of an epidemic is something that we need to be concerned about. We're funneling travel to five different airports. What's Canada doing? What's Mexico doing? What are other countries on our southern border if you land in Guatemala or El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, Panama, and you work your way up through Central America and present at the border? And whether or not we are being as aggressive as hospitals are and asking about open-ended questions, about your travel and how we're going to manage that. This situation actually was presented as a challenge and recognized it as a significant risk when we had the West African Ebola situation in both in the later part of 2014 working into 2016. And it was referred to as a national security priority. And, they started doing these entry screenings throughout the United States, both on our northern border and our southern border. It was ordered at that time by former President Barack Obama and screened just shy of about 8,000 adults and children at various ports and entries, depending on where they were coming from. It's just another situation when we think about migration and the possibility of whether or not there's going to be quarantine of individuals in order to help thwart the spread of the virus. 26 confirmed deaths as of this morning. And so these challenges continue to present themselves each and every day, and we'll see where this ultimately lands up. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. We're back, and we'll go to the talk lines. Jerry, welcome to the show, Jerry.
Yes, how are you? Good morning. I'm really concerned about the facts that you've brought up on your program in the last 30 minutes. It's kind of scary because, you've mentioned that they let these people in from China, and some of them even from the cities where this thing started. So how do we safely let them into the airport and they get scanned with that thing across their temple to see if they got a fever, if we don't even know how long the incubation period is for our bodies? They may get sick 10 days after we leave them, let them leave the airport, and that's scary.
It is to a certain extent. Obviously, the World Health Organization deferred on their characterization of this challenge. Obviously, I think they were meeting again yesterday. They still didn't do it. They may meet over the weekend, depending on how many cases continue to present itself, to see whether or not the remedial actions that were taken in China of the quarantine and thing and other actions that they took over there, whether or not they're having an immediate and significant impact. But as you pointed out, and based on the publications that I read early this morning and leading up into this first hour of the show, the number of countries are increasing. Obviously, there's now another case that could potentially be the coronavirus in Texas. By now, they may have confirmed that it is. But we're starting to see more and more present. And as this thing ramps up, it could be something that we really need to be concerned about. As Dr. Lopez pointed out, though, we don't really know how bad this virus will ultimately be. And the 26 confirmed deaths, it may actually be people that have already been, from a health perspective, significantly compromised for other reasons. So, until we get all of this data in, and this system is only as good as the information that's placed into the system that we can that the health officials around the world actually can continue to effectively monitor this, Jared. Yep, Rob.
If this had been a 50% death rate in China, would we be going through the same thing at the airports?
No, I think the WHO would have taken a much more aggressive stance on this issue. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they've done it before. They did it, you know, with SARS and MERS and the West African Ebola situation. And obviously the infrastructure in this would have been a lot more aggressive in their response.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All righty. But, I mean, they're legitimate questions, obviously. And as was talked about with Dr. Lopez, and I think he appropriately pointed out that this is not the only strain of a respiratory viral infection and is not the only one that's contagious as well. The remedial measures that you can take right now, wash your hands. In fact, they're saying wash your hands. And when you wash your hands, it's not like a five-second gig, right? They're saying it has to be a minimum of 20 seconds with the soap, antibacterial soap, or things of that nature. Make sure that you, wash completely your hands between your fingers and otherwise. Do not touch your eyes if your nose or otherwise or in your mouth. And just the more often that you can wash your hands, the better off you're going to be until they can figure out exactly where the transmission challenges of this are. They know from previous experience where more likely than not how it's going to be transmitted. Obviously, within the coming days, they'll be confirming that as well. And, the hospitals will continue to ask open-ended questions about travel. So if you present with flu-like symptoms, don't be surprised if they start questioning you about where if you've traveled here lately in the last 30 to 45 days, maybe even a longer period of time. I have talked to hospital officials this past week, and all of whom have begun to receive their notifications from the CDC and to put in their preventive protocols in dealing with this, both at the ER, primary care physicians, and otherwise. I think everybody in the healthcare delivery system across this country has been alerted and obviously are working towards putting in what is necessary to try and make sure that they're in the best position to identify what is being presented. Wanted to remind everybody also on another note, the LSU Tigers basketball team, they're 6-0 in the SEC. And if you love Tiger basketball, don't miss tomorrow's game, LSU at Texas. Pre-game, 12:30, tip-off, 1 o'clock, right here on WWL AM FM. And remember, you can get the games online at WWL.com as well as radio.com app. If you hadn't downloaded that app, you need to. You can get all of our stations in the Entercom menu of stations around the country on that radio.com app, and it's something that you definitely want to do. And on Sunday, NFL Pro Bowl, and 10 Saints are on the roster. Wide receiver Mike Thomas, Cam Jordan, Will Lutz, Deontay Harris, first team. Backups, Drew Brees and Teron Armstead, and alternates, Kamara, Warford, Jared Cook, and Andrus Pete. And you can hear that game here, too, Sunday, starting at 1:30 p.m. here on the home of the Saints in the NFL. And remember that Marshawn Lattimore did make the team, but he recently pulled out due to an injury. So it's now time for the National Cash Contest. Ready for your chance to win $1,000 in the Entercom National Cash Contest? The code word this hour is dollar. Text D-O-L-L-A-R, D-O-L-L-A-R to 72881. That's 72881. Text now and you could win $1,000 cash, and listen for the next code word just before the top of the hour, every hour on this show. And Scoot's going to have it every hour on the hour in his show as well. $1,000 is up for grabs. Win it for your wallet. Good luck from all of us at WWL. We never charge for text, but individual plan texts and data rates do apply. And remember, please don't text and drive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.